Welcome to the Watson Weekly. It's the weekend, folks. We're sponsored by Avalara. I'm Rick Watson.
Hi, it's Jessica Lesteski. Happy weekend. Happy Friday.
Happy buggy day in New York City. We're going to be talking about the consumer. I'm excited about what we're doing.
Yeah, we got a lot to unpack here. So, Rick, let's break down what the stories are this week.
On this week's show, we have the viral Dick's Sporting Goods app that's shooting up the App Store rankings. Next, we have the New York Times seems to be following around the Nike CEO trying to will into existence the Nike turnaround story. And finally, we're going to talk about the consumer, the gap between Amazon, Walmart, and consumer wallets.
Okay, Rick, so I'm going to first unpack this story about the Dick's app. If you did not see the post on LinkedIn from Lauren Hobart, she basically outlined how this app has beat out not only Gemini and many other shopping apps, but over the weekend, they went from a lower ranking to number 3, right behind Claude, right behind ChatGPT, ahead of Gemini. And really what the story is over the past couple of years, they've been leaning into their app presence. There's lots of like shoe drops, exclusivities that you can get, access to, you know, lots of different elements that are part of their loyalty program. But really what hit this viral trend was the Move app. And the Move app is just basically a way for you to get points for just doing what people do every day, which is working out. And it's pretty genius. Yeah. I went through it myself. It takes a really simple process of syncing your Apple, your Apple Health, your Garmin, a lot of other like MyFitnessPal, things like that. And basically it will record what your activities are. So if you work out for 30 minutes, you take 10,000 steps, you're going to get 3 points, which can go to merchandise and all kinds of other free gear.
Yeah, it's interesting. I mean, Strava and, you know, the Nike running app have had these for years, but they haven't wrapped it into merch and loyalty program. Does this mean that there's not really a moat around these other apps? Like once you start showing them the Benjamins, that's all it takes to move them over to Dick's?
That's pretty much all it takes. And I think that Dick's has a leg up here because it's not just one brand, right? It's not just one ecosystem. Dick's has really brought so many of these brands together, even like their own brand, DSG is really strong. You know, it's kind of like their more affordable private label brand, really great quality, especially if you're a mom of kids like me and your kids are outgrowing stuff every 6 months, but they want to have good quality product. And Dick's is a fun store to go shop in if you're a kid, right? There's lots of stuff to see, explore, do. They have these, you know, golfing bays now where you can test out golf clubs. So there's just a lot of things happening in a Dick's store. And now you're taking it to the app. And yeah, they pretty much disrupted that whole genre, I think, in a really smart way.
That's exciting. I mean, especially the era of AI features and everyone trying to figure out what the next AI thing. So is the lesson here, don't build the next AI thing, just build something useful?
100%. Yes. You have hit it right. I think this is proving like apps aren't dead. And in a place where 88% of consumers only have one shopping app on their phone, half have more than 4, 9% have more than 10. Like that's pretty tough real estate to break through. And kudos to Dick's for figuring out a formula that feels like it's going to work, especially in the Ozempic era where more people are going to work out. Like I think they've got something that's here to stick.
That's exciting. I mean, it's good to see like, you know, I don't know if Dick's is a little guy, but it kind of feels like it in the grand scheme of retail that an AI app and like Amazon and Walmart is there's a feel good story here.
I love it. Yes. I'm a fan. They converted me. I'm going to earn points and I'll show you my next free year.
All right. Next week, I'll see how many points you've earned. If you know me, you know, I don't mess around with my recommendations. And this is no exception. I've been recommending Avalara to clients for years. When we helped build the Ann Klein website, Avalara was the call. Here's the thing. Shopify's default tax settings are not enough. We're talking 12,000 plus tax jurisdictions just in the US, plus VAT across 190 countries. Avalara handles all of it automatically and right inside Shopify. Every client I brought them into is still running them today. Don't trust your tax and compliance to platform defaults. Learn more at avalara.watsonweekly.com today. Next up, we're going to talk about Nike CEO Elliott Hill. There was a, let's call it a puff piece in the New York Times, mm-hmm. comparing Nike CEO Elliott Hill and his tenure at Nike to Phil Knight, who is the founder of Nike. They talked about all the sins of Donahoe, which we've talked about at length over the years here, not only while it was happening, but at our NRF event this year. Nike dismantled all of its wholesale relationships, famously said they would never be on Amazon, tried to push people into a direct consumer app, thought they were a technology company. Their stock has been down.
Yeah.
But now it seems like Elliott Hill is starting to get closer to the athletes. It says they're restarting innovation. Is it going to be enough? Is it just like, what's the angle here that the New York Times is trying to take? Is there enough there?
It's a great question, Rick. And I have to say, for me as a consumer, no, but that's not who this piece was for, in my opinion. This piece was part of the redemption tour to get Nike back in the good graces with investors and get them that there's some believability in this turnaround story. You know, their Win Now plan really has a lot to do on a marketing strategy tied around these innovation platforms. Like, they've got an inflatable Olympic jacket. Who asked for this? Speaking of things that we don't need.
Inflatable jackets?
Yeah. Neuroscience-based footwear called Nike Mind. There's a new cooling fabric called AeroFit. Project Amplify, which is a powered running shoe built with a robotics partner. So like, they're trying to do these flashy, like, new innovation things where we've been talking about innovation is dead. And I think that the reality is going to be in what is this driving in the day in, day out consumer experience. You mentioned Nike's fallen from grace, sins of Donahoe. That impacted NPS as well. I mean, their NPS dropped 7 points, and it's in 2024, it's continued to fall. So I don't know that this is enough. And it feels like the great PR job, kudos to the comms team, but this is falling, I think, a little short in terms of remains to be seen on the turnaround story, what will happen there.
It seems like a lot of these ideas that they're doing are pretty niche ideas, and they're, you know, obviously the Olympics are happening and they're planning, you know, big thing there, the World Cup is coming up. And so Nike is really famous for sponsoring a lot of those things. But are their everyday products better? I think that's kind of the mainstream. As you get to these sort of like premium area that the elite marathoners buy, and of course, there's obviously there are some people that are going to chase those trends, but is the average person really going to need to buy that shoe? They're going to buy the DSG shoe, apparently.
100%. Or they're going to buy like the Adidas or the Reebok, or hey, even the New Balance, like old school dad shoe, is making a comeback in a big way. Hey. So speaking from a mom who, again, kids are outgrowing their stuff every 6 months, Nike quality has gone down. I've noticed it in my, I used to love Nike running shoes, can't really buy them anymore. So I think they've got to get back to like what the core consumer is looking for. And you talked about these niche things. There was that phrase, you know, niches make riches. In Nike's case, I don't think that's going to materialize.
Yeah, I'm not sure if that's just going to be the winning strategy for them. Next up, we're going to talk about Amazon, Walmart, and consumer wallets. Just to catch you up, why are we talking about this? Payments Intelligence has done a survey and talked about the share of spending from consumers. Where are they going between Amazon, Walmart, the rest of everything? There are a few interesting stats that came out of this survey. Retail share of total consumer spending dropped 9% in the last 3 years, from 34% to 30% by the end of last year. What that means is that people are spending less at stores and online, just as total retail. Where is that spending moving? It's moving to healthcare, it's moving to housing, it's moving to financial services like BNPL, credit card debt, those sorts of things. They're not spending less per se, but they're spending less on stuff. Mm-hmm. And so inside of that retail spend that's shrinking, what's actually happening is that discretionary categories are gaining ground. And I think this is part of because the higher income consumer that has discretionary, if everyone else is spending money on housing and healthcare, the people that are spending at retail are spending on higher ticket items because they actually have money, electronics, personal care, hobbies, furniture. They're getting more attention about what they buy. Does this track for you, Jess?
Yeah, look, we got to outfit those second, third, fourth, fifth, sixth homes, Rick, right? And, you know, that takes stuff, all of those categories you just talked about. Personal care also doesn't surprise me. There's so much rise in wellness and in health. And you see all of these like red light masks and red light products. There's so many influencer things, the walking desk or the walking pads. That doesn't surprise me at all. I think what surprised me in some of the data was the bifurcation and how it was so plain black and white categorized, that like Amazon's owning intent, Walmart's owning the grocery and like the essentials and the everyday. And I feel like there is a bit more to unpack there. Like it's not just so black and white. What do you think?
So let's get into the different elements. So let's hit Amazon first.
Yep.
They actually hit 11% of consumer spending in Q4 of last year. Obviously, that's a record for them. And Q4 is bigger than the other things. They have 35% category share in hobby goods. Electronics, 32%, which is up from 23% the last couple of years in 2019. Clothing and furniture share more than doubled. Health and personal care more than tripled. People are buying a lot more on Amazon. A lot of people bought something from Amazon during the holiday, especially Black Friday. 49% of all U.S. consumers bought something from Amazon during Black Friday. If you wonder why Bath and Body Works, if you wonder why Nike, all these people are going Wayfair, going back to Amazon. The reason is they're not just winning the holiday season, they're crushing the holiday season. Now, The category that is still on the struggle bus from an Amazon point of view is grocery. You know, previously it was 2% of share. Now they're 3% of share. So they're kind of moving nowhere fast through the pandemic. And so that's kind of the challenge here. The interesting thing is, and Walmart says it in their earnings call and Amazon says it as well, this sort of a tale of two consumers. Lower income consumers are living to paycheck to paycheck. And as a result, you kind of see that they're spending less on stuff. But the higher income categories are still buying more. And so I hadn't seen numbers like this that talked about Amazon's growth in discretionary spend, which is, I think the story in Amazon has been sort of like a slowdown in growth. Mm-hmm. But we're looking at these sort of absolute numbers on a huge base. Yeah. They're huge. I mean, Amazon is half of e-commerce. And so is it going to keep growing, you know, 20% like some of these other numbers? The answer is no, but it's still growing a lot.
It is. Yeah, there's so much to unpack underneath that. And then you talk about the Walmart headlines as a contrast. You know, their overall retail share seems to have barely moved in years, even though we talked about they're about to hit, you know, this $1 trillion market cap. They have all of these, you know, tailwinds behind them. Grocery really is what's propping up the business. Their U.S. food and beverage spending rose 13% from 2019 to 2025. 13 points. We talked about Amazon just gaining one. Grocery being this weekly traffic, this habitual thing. We know more people have gone to Walmart and they've taken share. But still, Target's number five, guys. We are number five.
Yeah.
But they're doing great. They're taking share from somewhere. And, you know, as that mix shift happens, that was what was so surprising to me, was that underlying, not the growth that we, I think, had expected Walmart to have in some of these other discretionary spending categories.
People seem to be going to Walmart because it's the habit of things you need to replenish, you know, because your refrigerator is getting empty, you need to stock your freezer, you know, all of these things. Whereas Amazon is like, do I want something? Do I wish for something? It's where I go to look, you know, not for the most esoteric things, but, you know, the mainstream discretionary. Now, Amazon is default American shopping.
I mean,
it's hard to come to any other conclusion.
Yeah. I mean, look, we still have to talk about Prime. And I think people forget about it because it's, you know, it's been around for so long. And it's like, oh, yeah, that's just that. That's Prime. That's Amazon. That's what they do. But you're talking about it's 190 million Prime members versus Walmart Plus members who are 30 million. And this is where I think Amazon still has that opportunity to win in grocery in a different way. Mm-hmm. They're going to go at it their own path. They're not trying to compete head to head with Walmart. I think, like I felt that they were. I had this realization this morning as we were, you know, prepping for the show and kind of diving into this analysis more. I've noticed this myself as a consumer. You know, Amazon has won on Prime membership, and you're going to get something fast. So when you have that need and you're like, I've got to have it tomorrow, they're doing something really smart, especially if it's a lower priced item. I'll take this example. We had to buy a tripod. We're recording our kids, you know, our kids' basketball games now, that we needed it next day. And the thing that Amazon popped up were groceries and essentials in order to get that item, you know, the next day. And I thought that was just really smart. So it's like, okay, fine. Yeah, I'm out of toothpaste. I'm going to get this toothpaste. Well, Amazon knows when I bought that toothpaste, they know I'm going to be out of that toothpaste in 30 days. And they're going to send me that nudge to like reorder that toothpaste. And I think that's how they're going to keep building in this essential space.
Yeah. I like to say that if you go into a normal grocery store, like brick and mortar, like we all do, Amazon has the largest middle of the store. Like they have the oddest shaped inventory than anyone else because they don't have anything around the edges really that most people want. It's like the fresh and the, you know, frozen stuff. You're not buying that on Amazon, but if it's shelf stable and it's dry and you could put it in a box or like a bubble mailer or something, Amazon is deadly in that sector of grocery. You know, their assortment is just so wide and so deep. Yeah. And so I think CPG brands that are in that area cannot ignore Amazon, but I would say the mainstream CPG brands, Walmart is the thing. And in the case where Kroger, Albertsons didn't merge, now Kroger has a new CEO. It says they're on a glide path and they're just cruising along.
Meanwhile,
Amazon and Walmart are like, you feel like they're sprinting to improve and Kroger is gliding. It's pretty clear where you should invest as a brand from these outlets.
Absolutely. And you know, I think it is worth saying when we're talking about grocery too, I feel like there's such a narrative of like, we're winning in grocery. So many retailers are trying to take that victory lap. And when you look at the grocery store ranking in terms of market share, at least for last year, it's Walmart with 21%, Kroger with 8.5%. Costco coming in strong, 8.2. Then you get it, then it like drops down to Albertsons at 4.9, Publix. So Amazon's not yet in some of these mixes, but I think what's being ignored is like the core grocery versus maybe a mix of grocery and essentials, where Amazon does seem to be, although it's a very small percentage point, we're talking about 3%. They do seem to be picking up some share and primed to do that, especially with their focus on AI. Predictive shopping. I just think it's going to keep being on a tear in many different ways.
Yeah. What I'm looking for is Amazon is adding 20% more stores to the Whole Foods fleet. I'm interested in seeing where they're going to add those stores, because I think when they're trying to get more fresh items, what markets are they focused on is important, because that could give them same day, next day capability for some of those items that they hadn't traditionally had. Also, you mentioned Costco, which is another one of my favorites. Their digital app, their personalization. The great thing about Costco is they really know who they are.
They do.
Few SKUs, huge discounts.
Yep.
You know, dusty warehouse experience. You know?
Lots of samples.
Right. Lots of samples. Yeah, but you could have a lunch there. You're like, let's go pick up lunch. No, let's just go through Costco.
Let's just roam the samples, check it out, little appetizer, and then a dollar hot dog, and we're done. So
yeah. Who doesn't love a good pigs in a blanket?
Exactly. Sign me up. Yeah. So if you're thinking about if you're Walmart and you're, you know, and clearly they know this data well, what do you think are the conversations they're having while they want to continue to grow their share? It feels like they're missing a big part of this discretionary spending. What do you feel like? Are they on the right trajectory? Do they have the right playbook? Or do you think they're going to be getting more aggressive in some areas to win maybe even some share from Amazon?
I do think, look, Amazon has 10-15 year head start on on Walmart in the sort of marketplace business. Amazon's growth engine has been the marketplace. What is marketplace about? Marketplace is about assortment. And so although marketplace is growing fast at Walmart, it's on a small base because they really didn't get started in earnest until after they acquired Jet. And even that like went through some fits and starts. So they only have like 4 or 5 years of track record there. Amazon, the whole time they've been doing the same thing, right? And so their assortment is just massive. And they've gotten so good at just like having that good experience, the reviews, everything there, the Prime membership. Walmart Plus only, you know, again, only started to get its act together in the last few years. And so I think Walmart, there's a lot of upside there, but Amazon has this huge moat. It just seems like it's getting wider and deeper, and they're not ever seem to be resting on their laurels.
No, they can't, because someone's always ready to like knock on that disruption door, right? Where else do you want to kind of leave this story? What do you feel like? We talked about Walmart, the conversations maybe that are happening in the like strategic boardroom. Anything else with Amazon, especially we've talked about their AI strategy. What more do you think they should be doing?
In terms of Amazon, they're, you know, they're blocking the bots. And, you know, that's a bit, that's definitely a point of discussion in the industry right now. I think Amazon can afford to do it. No one else can afford to do it. They're talking about doing the same thing to other websites with their buy for me feature, which I'm not really high on. Like, you don't go to Amazon to buy from someone else. It's not like it's hard to buy from someone else. It's just not as convenient as Amazon. And so putting those products and their bad fulfillment and non-prime discounts on the Amazon site, it just doesn't make any sense to me. Yeah. And so I really like what Walmart is doing. I expect that Walmart will actually put more marketplace sellers in stores. Mm-hmm. I think you'll see that become a thing, because that's a big advantage that they have over Amazon. You know, they're within 3 hours of 95% of America. And if you can expand marketplace sellers and assortment in stores there, then that's something they can do. It's not going to help them online, because Amazon still has so much assortment there, but it could help you get those items quickly.
Or it should otherwise help you prevent you from walking out of the store without buying something. Cause that's what I found with Walmart. If you do walk in, you don't necessarily like all of the selection there. To me, it's a missed opportunity to let me walk out the door and not have found a piece of furniture, because there's only so much real estate they do have. And so I think that is a place, if they had more digital like shopping experiences or signage for Walmart Marketplace, there's a chance for them to really capture that buyer before they walk out the door. Plus, you know, enticing them with free shipping or a ship to store strategy, again, something that Amazon doesn't necessarily have.
Yeah, I think going forward, Walmart Plus is going to continue to be the engine for the business, you know, and, you know, the marketplace, getting more sellers and assortment there, that's kind of going to be their path to growth. And their path to profitability is all the ads that these sellers are buying to show up in search. Yeah. When you've been in the Walmart app recently, it's already pretty flooded with ads. I mean, you scroll down very far. I think some categories are already as monetized as Amazon. And I think that's not true across the board, because I think Walmart, you can calculate pretty easily like what their advertising revenue to GMV is. Yeah. And I think Walmart is still like 3 times less than Amazon, if you can believe it. So you're going to see more ads on Walmart. That's going to be the future. And I think AI is going to power where and how they show up.
Yeah, absolutely. All right. So what are we going to do about this shifty consumer? You know, they are spending less. We've talked about this tale of two consumers. If you're not Amazon or Walmart, what's your strategy as a retailer?
Yeah, I think you need to be unique and different. You can't be mainstream. You have to have a niche that makes sense. I think Dick's understands who they are. I think Costco understands who they are. You need to have a unique approach. You need to have consumers that you're going after. Understanding what problem you solve is so important in retail these days. The universe does not need another Kohl's. It didn't need another Bed Bath and Beyond. You know what I mean? Like, you just don't need a lot more of these stores anymore. If you can go to Amazon, you can go to Walmart, you can go to Costco. Your specialty has to be special.
That's great. All right. Well, we're going to wrap it there. We've had so much to unpack. I've loved all of these topics. It is a never-ending world of retail that is so fun.
Thanks for listening and tuning in. If you haven't, like and subscribe to our channel. We do have a newsletter, watsonweekly.com. Subscribe, put your email on there. We won't spam you too much. Thanks for listening this week. Stay classy, be bold, and see you next time.
Have a great weekend.